Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your number one source for the latest in WWE news and straightforward analysis.
Are you ready to get this thing going?
Give me a hell yeah! I said give me a hell yeah!
Then let's get this show started right now.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review right here on the WWE Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Michael Ritter. You can find me on Twitter at Michael5Ritter and on Instagram at MichaelRitter5, also hosting the Football Function Podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Today, we're going to be talking about the SmackDown that aired on April 16th, 2021, as well as touching a little bit on the quote-unquote budget cuts that happened a little bit earlier in the week. And then I'm going to give my thoughts on the addition of Pat McAfee to the commentary booth on SmackDown. So definitely an eventful episode here in store for you today. First and foremost, though, before I get too deep into this podcast, I want to thank you all for listening to the show. If you're a first-time listener, I want to thank you for making this part of your day today. And if you're a regular listener, I want to thank you for making this part of your weekly routine. Almost messed that up there, but I do want to touch a little bit on the budget cuts that happened a little bit earlier in the week. Notable names that, you know, were let go. Obviously, the iconic Samoa Joe, Tucker to an extent, Kalisto, Mickie James. I mean, there's quite a bit of people. I mean, quite a big number, I guess you can say. I mean, it wasn't as bad as last year, which is still, it seems like not that long ago that that actually happened. And this year, I know this kind of happens every year after WrestleMania. They tend to clip the dead ends, I guess you can say, or trim the fat off the roster and just do whatever they can, I guess. And some of these cuts really just made absolutely no sense to me, just being completely transparent here. I did not think they were going to let go of Billy Kay or Peyton Royce, for that matter, and the Samoa Joe release just completely caught me off guard. I did think it was weird that he wasn't on the commentary booth on Monday Night Raw. Initially, whenever I seen that, I thought that maybe it meant to an in-ring return or just him not being there. I definitely didn't think that he was about to be fired by the company. And then whenever you look at Billy Kay, she had just now started something that it looked like was about to form with Carmella, maybe forming a tag team there, and it looks like that is absolutely out the window now that she is on the list of people who were released. And you just really hate to see it, honestly. I mean, some of these guys and girls had a pretty big following. They had a pretty big fan base here in the WWE, and I know that it's going to be tough seeing them leave, especially Samoa Joe. I mean, he just had all the talent in the world. He should have never been on the commentary table to begin with. He should have always been an in-ring competitor, and I'm not sure if or how much of his absence from the ring is injury-related, because it very well could be, and I'm not sure how much of it is just, you know, business, quote-unquote, whatever you want to call it, so I don't really know, but I do hope he finds work elsewhere. I know he will. People have kind of already speculated AEW might be a good landing spot for him, and if he did, I mean, that's just another big name that they would get there. Another guy who'd probably go on Chris Jericho's podcast and expose the WWE for whatever Samoa Joe has experienced over the years of him being here. It's just unfortunate that he didn't maximize what they could have done with him here on the WWE roster. He had some pretty good moments, but never that one signature moment here on WWE, so that's definitely a shame. But I do wish all of them the best going forward, and I hope that maybe, especially the girls like Peyton Royce and Billy Kay, I mean, we've seen crazier things happen, so maybe they can eventually come back to the WWE, considering that WWE is the only business or wrestling business company, whatever you want to call it, that has women's tag team, that has a women's tag team division. So I don't know, I mean, they're probably not, you know, tied to the hip by any means, but it would just make sense. They work better as a pair. So I think any promotion, any company that wanted to try to sign them and maybe just give them a new name but keep them together, I think that would probably be a pretty good idea. Transitioning a little bit, though, to the Pat McAfee news. He was officially added to the SmackDown commentary team, and I think that was a pretty good move by WWE. I mean, it's no secret for those of you who have listened to the show since I've been doing it, especially the time where Pat McAfee was involved in the NXT stuff with Adam Cole. I am a pretty big Pat McAfee fan. I mean, kind of just like here at the WWE podcast, the Pat McAfee show was one of the first shows that I actually got into in terms of podcasting. So it's kind of just tied to the hip with my weekly routine. I mean, that's just one thing that I always listen to the Pat McAfee show weekly. So I'm very familiar with Pat. And I feel like sometimes there's a little bit of a misconception going on with kind of how he's perceived amongst most of the wrestling community, because not, I know there are, I mean, he has a huge following. He has about 2 million followers on Twitter, probably about the same number of subscribers on YouTube. So, I mean, he is definitely a pretty popular guy. I can understand why, you know, he's admitted himself. He's not for everybody. Not everybody's going to like him. So I definitely understand the people who aren't necessarily so high on him. But I don't want that to be because you think that he doesn't take the wrestling business serious, or because you think that maybe he isn't going to work out here, because he is very talented. And I mean, if you love him or hate him, without a doubt, he's one of the best humans speaking into a microphone today. I mean, that's just a fact. The guy knows how to cut a promo. I feel like once he gets comfortable here in WWE, he's really going to be able to make a name for himself. And I think he's going to be a damn good addition. I mean, he's hysterical. He's a funny guy. If you actually just listen to what he's saying, he's being real. I mean, I could see it every day whenever I listen to his shows. You can just kind of see that he lets his real personality come out. And I actually saw it tonight on SmackDown. It definitely wasn't perfect by any means, but I mean, it was his first night. It doesn't hurt whenever you're alongside a guy like Michael Cole. And keep in mind that Michael Cole is the one who advocated for this. He's the one who pushed to have Pat McAfee be his partner. So, I mean, that should speak for something on its own, that Pat McAfee got the approval from Michael Cole. And it seems like that is a team that they're at least going to try out. So I'm definitely looking forward to it, though. Really quickly, I did want to provide just a small bit of audio, literally just 31 seconds of a clip of Pat McAfee actually talking a little bit about him being a wrestling fan and why he's a wrestling fan. So I kind of just wanted to play that for you guys, just so you can kind of know how he says, not in character or anything like that, just Pat being Pat and him talking about why he likes the wrestling business and basically just what he thinks about his new opportunity.
But I've always loved the business. I've always enjoyed the hell out of sports entertainment, professional wrestling, literally my entire life. I've been very open with, if it wasn't for the Attitude Era and wasn't for the Monday Night Wars and for me being dialed into these larger than life personalities and characters, I would have never probably had the aspirations that I had. You would probably not see or hear the same person. I assume it shaped part of my personality. I think it's pretty apparent now at this point. So I've always been a diehard fan.
See, so I mean, you kind of heard it there yourself. He's definitely taking this serious. I mean, it's like putting yourself in his position. I mean, if you've always been a fan, especially during that era, the Attitude Era, you can definitely see why he would really take this opportunity serious and why he's probably going to try to make the most out of it. And just knowing Pat for like how he is, he likes a challenge. And if you are going to sit there and tell him that he can't do this or he's not going to be able to do good at being on the SmackDown team, then I think that he might actually take that and try to prove you wrong. And if he does, that's great. And if not, I mean, I'm just glad he's getting this opportunity, and it's going to be pretty fun covering him for as long as he is on the SmackDown commentary table. So just wanted to provide a little bit of audio there, provide my thoughts about all that stuff. Moving on here, though, we should be able to dive right into the SmackDown review. And of course, we start here with Roman Reigns coming to the ring with Paul Heyman and Jey Uso. And whenever he gets in the ring, he actually stays silent for several minutes. And he kind of listens to the pumped in "You Suck" chants by the crowd, a little bit reminiscent of whenever he was getting booed out of the building by the live crowd in Orlando whenever he retired, or we thought he retired, The Undertaker. And he just got booed for like, what, 7 or 8 minutes where he didn't say a word. This was only like 2 or 3 minutes where he was kind of just staring at the camera or, you know, just looking around, basically just soaking in all of those chants from the pumped in crowd. But he does finally speak. And he tells Paul Heyman to tell the quote-unquote new viewer, in case nobody knows, or I guess if anybody didn't watch WrestleMania, he tells them to talk about the two guys that he beat at WrestleMania. So Paul does, and then he goes on about how they're both Hall of Famers and how they're both married to Hall of Famers. Not really sure how the married part goes, but I guess it somehow makes them a little bit more, I guess it's another thing on their resume, I guess you can say, to make them more impressive if they aren't already. But continuing here, Roman Reigns says that he took a page out of Paul Heyman's playbook by calling his own shot, basically just referring to him saying that he is going to quote-unquote smash them, stack them, and pin them 1-2-3. And then Roman kind of asks, after that, who's next? I mean, who is going to possibly want to step to him after seeing what he did to two Hall of Famers? And then he answers his own question and says that the answer is nobody. And since nobody is going to step to him, that he's fulfilled his obligation by opening SmackDown. So it's time for WWE to cut the check, and then they need to fire up the jet, because it's time for Roman Reigns to go home. And as he tries to leave, he's interrupted by Cesaro's music, who comes to the ring and gets him right in Roman Reigns' face. And they did get the close-up there, kind of just zooming in on Roman Reigns' face. They're probably going to use that clip in a video package a little bit down the line, because this is obviously who Roman Reigns' next opponent's going to be. But whenever Cesaro got in his face, he tries to reach and grab a microphone from somebody outside the ring. Whenever he does that, Roman Reigns actually leaves, him and Jey Uso and Paul Heyman. They all just leave the ring and they start walking up the ramp. And then that's basically it for that segment, at least for while they're in the ring. I thought that Cesaro was still going to cut his promo like normal, but they actually didn't. They just go to commercial break, and then we see Cesaro go backstage and talk to Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville. But real quick, before I talk about that interview with Sonya and Adam Pearce, I will say, though, now that it's pretty clear that Cesaro is going to be Roman Reigns' next opponent, I do like that. I think that Cesaro deserves it. He's going to get main event exposure like he already did tonight against Jey Uso, so I think that's going to be pretty beneficial for him going forward. Especially, you can tell, I mean, he already beat Seth Rollins at WrestleMania. I don't know why I couldn't remember that. But yeah, he beat Seth Rollins at WrestleMania, and now it looks like he's turning the page already, or at least he's trying to turn the page, because Seth Rollins does have a little bit of stuff to say about that later on in the episode. But at least intentionally, he is trying to turn the page to the Universal Championship and Roman Reigns. And we hear that straight from the horse's mouth right up next, because Sonya Deville and Adam Pearce are both approached backstage by Cesaro, and he asks for a one-on-one match against Roman Reigns tonight, and he says that Roman Reigns doesn't even have to put his title on the line. And Deville answers after interrupting Adam Pearce, and she says that she'll ask Roman, and then she'll get back to him. And I'm not going to lie, I've kind of been on this since the beginning. I've always had a little bit of a hunch, and they're making it kind of obvious, but Sonya Deville definitely has something up her sleeve, and she's definitely up to something. I don't know what it is. I don't know when it's going to be revealed, and I'll definitely eat my words if I'm wrong here, but I'm going to go ahead and go out on the limb, somewhat out on a limb, I guess. I'm just going to go ahead and say that Sonya Deville is definitely going to factor in with this Roman Reigns storyline pretty soon. I think she's going to maybe be revealed as a member of that little faction, or just somebody who was working for him all along. Maybe she'll get her own little name, kind of like how Paul Heyman got the, what is it, the council to the tribal chief. Maybe she'll get her own little signature name. I don't know why I couldn't remember that for a second, but maybe she'll get her own little signature name. But that's a little bit of speculation. I mean, right now we don't even know what's going on, but for some reason I just get the hunch that Sonya Deville is going to be getting a little bit more involved very soon. But moving on here to another match, not really a important match at all. I mean, Rey Mysterio versus Otis, only about 4 minutes long. And Rey Mysterio wins after hitting a 619 and then getting a little bit of a creative roll-up on Otis. Not just your typical roll-up, like the roll-up we're going to see a little bit later on tonight, because this was the first of two matches that ended in a roll-up. But like I said, this one really wasn't beneficial at all. I did like that Rey Mysterio and Otis looked like they both debuted new gear. Not like a new style of gear, just you can tell it was new gear, like updated. So I thought that was kind of cool. But moving on here, Paul Heyman cuts a pretty good promo backstage, just talking about how the rain at WrestleMania was actually just tears of angels because they knew what Roman Reigns was going to do to Edge and Daniel Bryan. And he even calls Cesaro a joke, a guy with a $2 million body and a 2-cent brain. And he goes on to say that they should give Cesaro what he wants and squash this thing before it even gets started. But I don't know. I thought this was kind of confusing. Maybe I didn't catch it, and I honestly probably should have went back and rewatched it, but it's just too late for me to do that. So I wasn't sure, really. At this point, I thought that they were going to give him the match against Roman Reigns, but it turns out that is not what happened at all. So I don't know where I kind of got confused during the show. And I kind of made a note here to say that I definitely miswatched something, or I don't know, I guess, because I even thought that they put a graphic up on the TV. So if anybody else noticed, if you saw a Roman Reigns versus Cesaro graphic, definitely let me know. But for some reason, I thought that it was going to be Roman Reigns versus Cesaro, but that is not the case at all. It ends up being Jey Uso versus Cesaro in the main event. And up next, we get another match. We get Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens. And Sami wants to prove to Kevin that Kevin cannot beat him without the quote-unquote toxic fans in attendance and Logan Paul being around the ring and ultimately getting involved. And this match didn't quite live up to their WrestleMania standards, but it was still entertaining. I mean, Kevin Owens, he sent Sami Zayn flying through the air when he bounced him off the top rope. I don't know if I've seen that before. I just thought it looked cool. It was at least a good visual in the match, so I thought that was pretty cool. And then Sami Zayn actually hit Kevin Owens with a sunset flip powerbomb that was actually highlighted by the commentary team, that I thought that was a pretty good spot, and they actually talked about it a little bit. And Sami Zayn actually ended up kicking out of two pinfalls here. But you thought he was about to maybe take control of the match whenever he he got Kevin Owens, like, just scraped his eye. You know what the heels do. They normally kind of just scrape the eyes a little bit when the referees aren't paying attention. That's what Sami Zayn did. And initially, I thought, hey, he's about to try to get in the match and steal a win here, making it one win apiece, maybe setting up for the rubber match at WrestleMania Backlash. So maybe that was my originally thought, or that's what I originally thought was going to happen. But Sami Zayn ran as soon as that happened, as soon as he scratched Kevin Owens' eyes. And Kevin Owens was able to get off of his back because he was actually attacking him whenever he did that. Sami Zayn tried to make a run for it, got to the top of the stage, eventually got counted out by the referee. But Kevin Owens wasn't going to let it end like that. He ran up there personally and grabbed Sami Zayn, fought him a little bit as they made their way back to the ring. He threw him in the ring, hit him with a stunner, and ended it a little bit more on his terms. Just to steal a little bit of a quote from Edge there. So I don't really know here. I don't know if this is going to be a little one-off thing just to kind of end their WrestleMania feud, just because Sami Zayn was going to accuse the win of being bogus, of not being a clean win because of Logan Paul or whatever reason. So, I mean, this match wasn't a clean win either, so I could see this one going to Backlash as well. And it seems like, I mean, like we all expect, and like Matt's mentioned multiple times throughout the week, this Backlash card is going to be very similar to WrestleMania, and it continues here with what happens next. The Intercontinental Championship picture gets a little bit of mic work, or at least a little bit of mic time, I guess you can say. Apollo Crews cuts a promo backstage saying that the WWE Universe has been pretty quiet since he beat Big E at WrestleMania, and that anybody who comes for his Intercontinental Championship will be annihilated by the Nigerian Nail. And I wasn't sure if that's his new nickname. I think it is. I think he's trying to introduce us to it, if that's what he is doing. Nigerian Nail. I mean, I know that there was once a Nigerian Nightmare for an NFL player back in the 70s or 80s. I don't know exactly which one. But I'm all for nicknames. I typically like them whenever they're organic and whenever they stick on their own. So hopefully this isn't something that's going to try to be forced. But who knows? I mean, Nigerian Nail definitely has a little bit of a ring to it, especially with what he's doing lately. And I do think this is going to be a pretty long title run for Apollo Crews, especially with the help of Commander Aziz, formerly known as Dabba Kato. So he's going to have a little bit of a henchman, a little bit of a bodyguard, I guess you could say. Somebody on his side who's going to help him secure that Intercontinental Championship every time he's in the ring defending it. Moving on here in the SmackDown card, we get Bianca Belair's victory party. And the Street Profits come to the ring and they say that Bianca's win at WrestleMania was inspirational to them. And they, since it's take-back season, according to them, they are ready to get their SmackDown Tag Team Championships back that they haven't had, and I believe it was 3 months. Michael Cole said it before the match that they haven't had an opportunity at the SmackDown Tag Team Championships in 3 months, I think since they lost them. So they finally get the chance to get them back, and we'll see how the match goes. They do, before the match, they show highlights from Bianca and Sasha's match at WrestleMania, and then Bianca comes to the ring. She says that she's been floating since Saturday night, and she feels blessed. But despite the setbacks and the struggles, she never stopped believing that this moment was possible. And then she says that if you'd have asked her a year ago if she could main event at WrestleMania and win the SmackDown Women's Championship, that she would have said yes. And she doesn't think that's cockiness. She just thinks it's pure confidence and believing in herself and knowing what she brings to the table. But she does thank Sasha Banks. She thanks her for pushing her at WrestleMania and for making history with her. And then she goes on to say that they're just getting started making history. And then immediately after that, you kind of see them start to celebrate. That is the Street Profits and Bianca Belair. They kind of start, or she tries to hype them up for their tag team match, saying that they only have gold in this household, telling them that they better get the win. And then the cameras move backstage where Sasha Banks is being interviewed by Caleb Braxton, where Sasha basically can't even get a word out. She kind of looks at her scar and she just says Bianca's name and then walks away very angrily, or pissed off, I guess is just a better way to say it. She was definitely not happy, and I thought maybe she was going to the ring to cut an official promo and say where she's going from here, but that really wasn't what happened. We didn't see any more of Sasha as the night went on. But Caleb Braxton did eventually get an interview. This time it was with Bayley, and Bayley just calls out Bianca for crying before her match even started at WrestleMania. She claims that Bianca was crying because she didn't even think that she could actually win. And then Bayley eventually says that it's time that she gets back in the title picture. So she challenges Bianca to a match for a SmackDown Women's Championship. I'm not sure when. If that was announced, I definitely missed it. but I expect it to happen probably on SmackDown, given their need for having championship matches on SmackDown. We had one tonight, the tag team championships, which we're going to get to next. But you can expect next week, or maybe the week after, Bayley will get that championship match that she challenged Bianca for. I just wouldn't mind them maybe putting a little bit of juice behind this storyline. I don't want it to just be, oh, you challenged me for the championship? Well, all right, here you go, you got it. No, I hope Bianca comes out next week and maybe says something like, what the hell have you even done besides hosting your Ding Dong Hello show to think that you deserve a chance at my championship? So maybe she'll come out and say something similar to that. I mean, I don't really know. Given how they do things lately, I could definitely see her just accepting and saying, all right, I'm a fighting champion, so you want a piece of me, you want a shot at this title, you got it. And maybe they'll do it at Backlash, but I don't know. The fact that they still address Sasha Banks and they kind of showed her today makes me feel like maybe she's going to stay involved, but I don't know. It's kind of hard to predict at this point, given that they kind of did the same thing with Cesaro. I mean, they look like they were turning the page with him to Roman Reigns, but also keeping Seth Rollins involved. Same thing with Bianca. It looks like Bayley is wanting. Bianca didn't even acknowledge Bayley, so we don't really know what she thinks about that. But Bayley trying to sneak her way into the title picture. And also, Sasha clearly being visibly still upset about everything that happened at WrestleMania, and as she should be. I mean, you shouldn't be happy about losing your championship, especially at WrestleMania. It's not like she pulled a Kofi Kingston and just came out throwing pancakes the next week. She actually came out and showed that she was pissed off. So that's something that I definitely liked about Sasha Banks. And you could just say, at the very least, you have not seen the last bit of her in this SmackDown Women's Championship picture. Up next, we get another match. This time it was for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships between the Dirty Dogs and the Street Profits. And this was a pretty good match. I do think that these are the two best tag teams on SmackDown right now as we sit here. So putting them together in a championship match, I guess, isn't necessarily the worst thing you can do. And this match lasted 11 minutes. And despite a damn good performance from the Street Profits, Dolph ended up winning the match with a zigzag on Montez Ford. So they successfully retained their championships. And I don't know where to go from here as far as the tag team picture. Your guess is as good as mine. Next week, I'm sure we'll probably get another team in there, maybe inserting themselves. Maybe the Mysterios, but I don't really know. This tag team division is not exciting at all on SmackDown, so hopefully they get a little bit of a shakeup without necessarily even doing the official shakeup. Maybe they can just do something a little bit different with how they're booking the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. But anyways, moving on, Kayla Braxton, who's having a busy night, she gets another backstage interview. This time it's with Cesaro, and he kind of goes full 8 Mile mode here by basically agreeing with everything that Paul Heyman said earlier to insult him. And he says that all of that isn't going to change what he's going to do to Jey Uso tonight. So basically just agreeing with Paul Heyman, saying, yeah, you can insult me all you want. It doesn't really matter. I'm going to turn it against you by agreeing with you and just saying that it's not going to stop the fact that I am on a mission to get to Roman Reigns and that Universal Championship. And I'm going to go through his right-hand man tonight. And I was definitely looking forward to that match, and we'll get there right after we cover this next match, which was Natty versus Shayna Baszler. Not a very long one at all. It was definitely a display of technical wrestling. I will say that. Tamina kind of got involved, so did Nia Jax a little bit. Tamina actually saved Natty from getting her hand stomped on by Baszler when she does that thing where she, you know, twists their arm, gets her elbow up, and then does that stomp, which is definitely a move that, if any move in the WWE looks like it's going to actually hurt somebody, that is definitely one of them. But like I alluded to a little bit earlier, another match is going to end in a roll-up, and this just so happened to be that match. Natty did win with a pretty good roll-up. I'm not going to lie. I mean, it's hard to say that, a good roll-up. I know that those two words really don't go well together in a sentence. But if you look at Rey Mysterio's roll-up earlier, like I said, it was a little bit creative. It wasn't just your typical get distracted and roll somebody up. There's a little bit of technique behind it. And I guess ultimately, if your job is to win the match, if you can very easily win the match by positioning yourself to get that type of roll-up win with the shoulders down, I mean, why wouldn't you do it? But I mean, obviously, I'm not a fan of how repetitive it is. I think the WWE obviously uses it as a crutch way too often, like they did tonight. They clearly didn't want to give Shayna Baszler a clean loss or just a loss that's going to hurt her, but they didn't want to ruin the momentum that Natty and Tamina have right now. So I can definitely see why they did what they did there. And this was a roll-up where she kind of held her down, and you could just see Natty using her strength. She didn't just hold her down and let Shayna Baszler act like she was kicking her legs. Like, Natty made it very obvious to put her left hand down on Shayna's shoulder to act like she was actually having to resist her from coming up, and she was actually having to force her to stay down. So I think that was actually pretty good work by Natty and Shayna Baszler there to make the roll-up look like it was actually a decent way to end the match, which isn't really something that you can say nowadays. But after Natty does roll Shayna Baszler, you know how it is. You already know the schedule. It's almost midnight already, so I am trying to get this out. And sometimes these words do not want to come out. And I usually drink a Monster to, you know, to do these episodes. So sometimes if you think I'm talking really fast, that's probably why, because if I were to use my own energy, there's no way I would be able to make it through these episodes without falling asleep. But anyway, what I was saying is after Natty hits the roll-up on Shayna Baszler, Nia Jax jumps in, and she tries to attack Natalya, but Tamina does not let that happen, and she once again saves the day by super-kicking Nia, and then they walk away clean, as they have for the past few weeks now. So they look like, despite losing at WrestleMania, they look like a team that's certainly on the rise, going in the right direction, and with the most legitimate case to take those titles off of Shayna and Nia at some point. Definitely wasn't at WrestleMania, maybe at Backlash. That will be the match that has a different ending than the match at WrestleMania did. But moving on here, we get the main event, Cesaro versus Jey Uso. Jey Uso cut a promo before the match begins, basically just telling Cesaro that he's going to figure out why they call him Main Event Uso, and he actually does. And he said more than that. It was a pretty good promo, a good passionate one by Jey Uso. It looks like he's getting a little bit of that Paul Heyman teaching as well, because you could tell Jey Uso is actually trying, or at least trying to improve on the mic a little bit. So I actually really like seeing that from Jey, as well as him, you know, thriving in the main event picture as well as he has for the past 5 or 6 months. This is no different. Cesaro versus Jey Uso. And these guys actually worked pretty damn well together. I don't know why I would expect anything different, considering that this is two veterans, but I mean, they just went together and it was just damn good tag team work. Maybe they have a little bit of chemistry from the days back when Cesaro was with Tyson Kidd and the Usos were the Usos, and they had several tag team matches against each other. So they probably do have a little bit of chemistry dating back to all of those days, going on tour and live events. I know that they like to use the hell out of tag team matches at house shows and live events just to maybe feature all the guys. You know, you want to get all the superstars out there you want to get as many out there as you can. So why not make a 6-man tag match with random wrestlers at every single live show? And I've been to a lot of them over the years. I have always seen just a lot of random teams, random 6-man, 8-man tag teams just thrown together. But I mean, that's just part of it. It's just part of going to a live event. And I definitely know that as I'm going in there. So, I mean, it's not a bad thing by any means. I just kind of thought that could be a little bit why these guys work so well together, I guess. A short way of saying what I just explained for like 20, 30 seconds there. But Cesaro does have a pretty good spot in here where he has one of those corkscrew uppercuts. He's been doing it a lot lately where he jumps off the rope and he just spins in midair. And that's a thing of beauty, I will say. I like that. And it gets prettier and prettier every single time he does it. And after this match kind of started out slow-paced, it turned pretty intense quickly, and it got really physical after they kind of started trading slaps to each other in the face in the middle of the ring. And as Cesaro kind of started to pick up a lot of momentum and really get some steam going, he was about to put Jey Uso in the swing, and he was starting his count. I believe it got up to 4 or 5, but he was attacked from behind by Seth Rollins, ending the main event match in a disqualification. So you can expect, I don't know what Roman Reigns is going to say about that, given that he probably doesn't like his cousin's matches get interfered with. And the fact that Seth Rollins did it, does that begin a little bit of something involving Seth Rollins now? I mean, that's kind of something that went through my mind whenever I seen that. Or I don't know if they're just going to truly continue on with this Seth Rollins versus Cesaro thing. That's kind of what threw me off. I was like, well, I mean, I was officially on board with Cesaro versus Roman Reigns. I was starting to wrap my mind around that. But throughout the show, I will say, they continued multiple times to show the highlight of Cesaro getting spun around. Seth Rollins getting spun around on Cesaro's shoulders when Cesaro wasn't using his hands, which I thought was kind of weird. They definitely showed it a lot. I thought that the first time they did it, and then I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. And the second time, I really didn't notice that they'd already done it. But like by the third or fourth time that they did it, I was like, all right, what the hell are they doing here? And then I guess I kind of realized, all right, they're trying to embarrass Seth Rollins. He's going to get pissed off and eventually come out here. And that's exactly what he did. And he specifically said that this isn't over, that he has not seen the last of him, and he's going to get his revenge. He called it a fluke, a shot from the sky, basically a 1 in a million that you can tell that it's late, and definitely towards the end of the episode when I just called Cesaro Apollo. But anyways, you can already tell that Seth Rollins and Cesaro are going to be fighting at Backlash at the very least. I don't know if anybody else is going to be involved in terms of Jey Uso and Roman Reigns. It just didn't really make sense, I feel like, to begin touching up on the Cesaro and Roman Reigns thing while Seth Rollins is still trying to get a little bit of revenge. I feel like this whole three-person dance partner thing is getting a little bit old with Roman Reigns. I want to see him focus in on one guy. And that's, he hasn't necessarily said a word about Seth Rollins yet, but you could see him not liking what Seth did to Jey Uso and ending their match. Not that he touched Jey Uso, but I mean, he ended their match. So I don't know. But at the same time, he might appreciate him for attacking Cesaro, given that Cesaro disrespected him earlier in the night, I guess you can say, or just definitely pissed Roman Reigns off, because you can just see that look on Roman Reigns' face. He didn't appreciate Cesaro coming out and interrupting him, hitting his music, and basically stepping up to the challenge that Roman Reigns put out there when he said, "Who's next?" So you can expect Cesaro to be involved in the main event picture, and that's the biggest thing I took away from this, is Cesaro was still, despite he didn't just get his WrestleMania moment and they're going to push him to the side. No, he's getting elevated after WrestleMania, and that's what I want to see from Cesaro. So I'm excited for this. I'm excited to see him continue his feud with Seth Rollins, because they put on a hell of a match, maybe match of the night, or just match of the entire WrestleMania card, arguably just with maybe Bianca Belair and Sasha. So definitely SmackDown had some damn good matches at WrestleMania, but I will say that Cesaro and Seth Rollins is a match that if they were to fight at Backlash again, I think that would be a hell of a match. So I wouldn't be opposed to that at all, but I am looking forward to whenever Cesaro does officially transition over to Roman Reigns, and we get to see some good matches between them too, because I do think there is a lot that can be told there, and maybe just some good matches and some good performances by both guys in store for us. And that's always fun, especially whenever you get a good story. That should just about do it for me here, though, on the SmackDown review. Hope you guys all enjoyed this episode. I will be back this Sunday talking to Matt on the weekend review. I'll be joining him on that episode. I'm looking forward to that, getting able to cover everything that happened on Monday Night Raw, the Raw after Mania, and then also touching up on some things that maybe I didn't get to go as in-depth as I would have liked here on the SmackDown review, or maybe just touch up on some things and get Matt's opinion. It's always fun whenever you can bounce off your opinions and your thoughts with somebody else, especially someone else who's just as, if not more, passionate about wrestling as you are. So looking forward to that. But I hope you guys all have a fantastic weekend. Walk passionately in the direction of your dreams, and I'll talk to you soon.